This is one where, given this man's background and everything that he's done, we should be, this is maybe almost a microcosm of the lounge show itself, where we say nothing is off topic, because we're going to have a lot of different directions to go in here. One of the things that strikes me right off the bat is when you look at the FDH Lounge, this being episode number 105, and some of the past shows that we've done, he's crossed paths in one way or another with a number of the people that we've had on previously. Crossed paths with Bob Barker on Truth or Consequences, crossed paths with Al Jaffe, of course, long time at Mad Magazine as well, one of the people like himself who is most associated with Mad Magazine. And I understand, I got a note from our senior producer, Steve Cervillo, the FDH New York Bureau, who, by the way, did a boffo job lining up a lot of guests here tonight. Apparently he knows our good friend Simon Applebaum as well from Tomorrow Will Be Televised. That doesn't surprise me, because Simon kind of covers the same side of the street, it seems like, with technology and gizmos and whatnot. But this gentleman has just got so many different fascinating aspects to his career. He was the longtime Mad Magazine creative consultant for a quarter century, known as Mad's Maddest Writer. We have links up, by the way, tonight to his website, to his podcast, his Twitter page as well. He is the Gizwiz for ABC's World News Now and the Daily Gizwiz broadcast. And so many different things to talk about, as I said, with this gentleman, Dick DiBartolo, who we welcome to the FDH Lounge. Dick, pleasure to have you with us tonight. How are you, sir?
I'm great. And after that intro, I think I'm way too busy to even talk to you.
Yeah. I always like to work up these eulogy-type intros for people. Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. That, you know, I got some notes here that our senior producer wanted me to ask. The first one he mentioned was with two-time past guest of ours, Bob Barker, on Truth or Consequences. Of course, that being, you know, essentially Bob Barker before he was Bob Barker in terms of being known to the public, as it were. What were some of your thoughts of working with him?
Well, you know what? I worked with Bob much later than that.
Okay.
I was working for Mark Goodson, Bill Todman Productions, and they were the ones who produced The Price is Right.
Oh.
And Bob Barker was on that for years. But what happened was, a long time ago, you're probably too young for this, there was a TV show called Real People.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a kind of reality show about what people did for careers, unusual careers. And Goodson also owned What's My Line. And they came up with an idea to do a one-hour show called That's My Line. Not What's My Line, but That's My Line.
Mm-hmm.
Where we would have unusual people on an hour show in prime time. And Bob Barker was the host of that. And I worked for Goodson Todman New York, but Goodson said, oh, you know what, you guys would get along great. Come out to the summer. And Bob and I hit it off because we're both big animal lovers. And, you know, Bob has been great about supporting animal rights. And he single-handedly got furs thrown off The Price is Right. He said, either the furs go or I go. And he turned it into the longest-running game show on television. He's not there now, but he's a real sweetheart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was what we found to be the case just in our brief interactions with him. You also crossed paths with, you know, it looks like a who's who of just some of the most entertaining people probably the business has ever seen here, the Match Game. I mean, just a short list would include, you know, like Gene Rayburn and Brett Summers, Charles Nelson Reilly, Richard Dawson. What was that
and
like?
And one of my favorites, who I am so proud to know her, Betty White. Betty White, this past year, has hit celebrity gold.
Yep.
You know, she made Saturday Night Live, and she's in some commercials, and she is another person who, she's just, you know, you hear people say, oh, that's a very generous person. Well, Betty White is. Back back when Mets game started out in New York City, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I remember she was on the show one day, and my first book for Mad Magazine had come out. And Betty was, she's always a million laughs. And I said, oh, Betty, my first book came out, and I want to give you a copy. So anyway, I didn't think anything more of it. And then on the show, Gene Rayburn said, so Betty, what's going on in your life? And Betty said, well, Gene, nothing's happening much in my life. But you know what? Dick DeBartolo, the guy who writes the questions, he has a new book. And she plugged the book, and it was just great. It was really wonderful for her to do that. Of course, back in those days, they had standards and practices, and who came screaming up to the studio, and I had to sign an affidavit that I did not ask her to do that. I did not pay her to do that. It was a riot.
Well, and that's funny to hear you mention standards and practices, because this was another question that Steve wanted me to ask you here tonight, and I think it's a particularly inspired one on his part. For a show like that, with some of the moments that it has, do you ever remember having any questions where standards and practices maybe got involved or said, hey, Dick, you're tiptoeing a little too close to the line here? What were there any great stories involved with that as
well,
far
you
as
know
trying
what?
To get it past?
Well, what happened was, and Ira Scutch, who produced the show for years, directed quite a few of them, the very first time someone said boobs, they stopped tape for a minute because they didn't know what the heck to do. And the guy from Standards and Practices was sitting there, and he wasn't quite sure what to do. And as luck would have it, he had his wife was there observing what it was like to see the match game done in person. And he said to his wife, do you think boobs is too racy an answer to let go out on the airwaves? And she said, no, I think it sounds fine. So he said it was fine, and Ira said it was fine, and that sort of opened the floodgates to boobs being acceptable. But I did know on one show, Marsha Wallace answered genitals, and that did not get by. They bloofed it out. You just hear a big bam on the air, and then a big red X. They soup it over her answer. So there were points at which Standards and Practices said that's going too far. But, you know, Standards and Practices is pretty much gone now from the networks, as you can tell by what's said and done on the air these days.
Well, you know, that was just a really strange time, you know, in history that you actually were working there. You know, I mean, when you're looking at, you know, the 60s and 70s and sort of the evolving standards and everything like that, I mean, it really must have seemed like, you know, the business was kind of making it up as it went along, because stuff that you know, you wouldn't have come close to in the 50s, you know, at least some of that was getting through on a regular basis.
Yes,
and probably by
but
the end
you know
of
what?
Time, most of
there's a trick that writers use. And we used it when the show went to California. They added three or four more writers: Joe Newstein and Bobby Sherman. And I still wrote from New York. Goodson told me he was moving the show to California. Did I want to go? And I said, you know, Mad Magazine is here, and I'm a native New Yorker. And he said, you know, as long as there's a match game, you'll always have a career. Because, you know, the match game started out as a serious show, got canceled. Goodson told me that I had 6 weeks of work left. And then over the weekend, I thought about maybe turning it into a comedy show. So I went back on a Monday and I said, hey, Mark, instead of these a president who appears on Money and a color of a flower, what about silly questions? He said, well, like what? I said, like, how about Mary like to pour gravy on John's blank? And Goodson laughed, and he said, oh, that's funny, but what will people say? They'll laugh like you did, and then they'll say serious answers, mashed potatoes, meatloaf. And he said, listen, it's canceled. They can't cancel it twice. You have 6 weeks of shows left, so do what you want. And I started doing more of those questions. He called me in again a month later. He said, the ratings are way up. They're going with it for another year. So consequently, pretty much whatever I wanted to do was fine with Goodson. He did on his commitment that to the day he died, as long as Match Game was on in the U.S., I did get a paycheck. No royalties, but I did get a paycheck.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know, yeah. that's the sign of a good creative manager, somebody who's going to take somebody like yourself and let them do what they need to do and everything like that, because, you know, that clearly would have been the only way to work with somebody like you, is just kind of turn you loose and let you do your thing. In your capacity, and I haven't been able to get this ascertained one way or another in some of the research that I've been doing here, as the creative consultant for Mad Magazine, and given your background with television, were you involved at all with Mad TV as that was going forward?
No, you know what? It's very interesting is that Mad TV has nobody from Mad on it. And when it first was in the trades that it was going to be coming along, I had my agent call, and the guy at the other end, one of the producers, said, strangely, we've been told that we should not hire anybody from Mad. He said, I don't know the reason, but so to answer your question, neither I nor anybody else of the usual gang of idiots had anything to do with Mad TV. It was a licensing deal. They licensed the name, they licensed Alfred's likeness, and for a while they had Don Martin cartoons.
I was going to say, yeah, there was, I remember that. I remember the Don Martin cartoons in there. Okay, so that's how tenuous the connection was. Okay.
Yes, exactly, yes. Just a royalty for the use of Mad stuff.
Wow. I'll bet people learned a lot from what you just said there, because I don't think it's commonly known that it was that tenuous an association.
No, it was slim to none.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Well, you know, I guess the Mad TV people got their money's worth then, because they, you know, in the public mind, there was that connection there. So
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And people would say to me, what do you think of the Mad show? And I would say, well, you tell me first. But I said, but before you tell me, I'll tell you that Mad Magazine has nothing to do with it. And then they'd say, oh, in that case, I thought it was terrible this past weekend. You know, they were trying to find out if I had written anything on the show so that they would not be harsh about it. But no, we had nothing to do with it. But it did have a long run. I think it ran like 6 seasons.
It did. You know what? And I enjoyed it. And I you know, it may be unpopular to say, I thought it was better than, you know, a lot of the kind of tepid years of SNL that it was going up against. But I guess I'm in the minority on that one. But it's funny. So nobody wanted to criticize, like, the goofy fat guy skits of Will Sasso, for example, to you, as long as they thought you had anything to do with it.
Exactly. People are kind that way. It's very funny.
Well, kind is one word. Gutless might be another. But that's
suck ups is another.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Let's tell.
You know, it's very funny.
Hear.
There's another funny story. Did Jaffe tell you about the Mad Folding and that he created that?
We talked a lot about that, and we talked about it going digital here. It looks like it's going to be going digital at some point here, but what can you tell us about that?
Well, you know what? Did he tell the story about how it came about?
I think we covered the origin.
Well, anyway, this is what I recall from my days up at Mad with Gaines, uh-huh. is that, and maybe Bill has it wrong, is that Playboy, I don't know what year it was, they started the fold-out.
Okay.
Where you had the third sheet fall out of the magazine, so you could have a three-panel fold-out, centerfold. And Jaffe said to Gaines, listen, I have an idea, Bill. In keeping with our theme of always being cheap, why don't we do a thing where Playboy's doing a fold-out, but we're so cheap and so poor, we can't afford a fold-out, all we can do is a fold-in. And then he described to Bill what he had in mind, where you would fold the page in, and one image would turn into a different image. And Bill said, oh, you know, let's run with it. And Jaffe is now in his 80s, and I think he's been doing it for about 45 years. So he's just knockout amazing.
Oh, yeah, you know, and he was telling us when he was on last year, I mean, it's still freaking freehand, you know? I mean, that's...
yes! Yeah, you know what, I don't think, I believe there is just one cover in all of Mad's history that has been computer-generated. Everything else is still art by hand.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, he's a big, you know, part of what's, you know, made it an institution. And, of course, same with you, you know, being, you know, Mad's maddest writer. And then your continuum of articles being in every issue, the way that they've spaced it out. Talk about that story and about how Mad, you know, was able to work it out with you to have just this this long continuous span of your content appearing in there.
Well, you know what? I was always good at deadlines, and if something didn't work in the magazine and they quickly needed a page or something, they would say, you know, is there any chance you could generate a page or something for over the weekend? And I said, oh, yeah, that's definitely no problem. And then, you know, one day Gaines said, he said, you know, you always come true for us. You know, is there anything we can do for you? And I said, you know what? I just would like to be in every issue. I said, sometimes I have two or three things in one issue. Is it possible that if it's an article that isn't absolutely timely, that we could always make sure I just have something in every issue? And Gaines said, my God, that's the least we can do. And Nick Meglin, who was the person who originally got me into Mad, said, you know, I'll make sure they do that for you. And so in the current issue, they do have my picture on the letters page congratulating me for being in 400 consecutive issues. So I guess that's a long streak.
Yeah, I mean, that's unparalleled, really. I mean, that's quite a streak there. And I know that the run that you had was recounted up to the point of your book when it came out in 94, Good Days in Mad, a hysterical tour behind the scenes at Mad Magazine. And you've been the author, of course, of some of the other things that have come out, Madvertising, Mad Murders, the movies, the Mad Book of Sex, Violence, and Home Cooking. So these are things that, I mean, I'm assuming that these flowed from your role as the creative consultant at Mad and then consequently the guy they turned to for these projects, huh?
Well, yes. Well, you know what? They didn't. I would go in and sit in on cover meetings, but a lot of stuff I did was, you know, Mad has no advertising budget. I don't think they've. I can't remember them ever advertising. And I would always go to Gaines and try to come up with inexpensive ways for Mad to get its name in front of the public. And like one of them was the Mad Minute, where I would write these little 1 minute silly fake commercials, and Sarah Fowler, who was an editorial assistant at Mad, had a great sense of humor. We would record them, send them free to disc jockeys, and Bill said, you know, what will it cost to do this? I said, we can send 100 out with every issue for under $1,000, or actually $1,000. And he said, all right, that let's do that budget. And I would come up with crazy things to do at comic conventions. And there was just no umbrella term for what I did. And I said to Bill, why don't I just be creative consultant? And he said, oh, that sounds fine. I wanted to do something really crazy, but some people did. We wanted to all have stupid titles on the masthead, but some people wanted their real title, and so I stuck with a real title, which was creative consultant. Well, and that's how that came about.
The funny thing is our senior producer, our FDH New York Bureau, Steve Servillo, has sometimes alternately used the term of creative consultant for FDH for himself. So perhaps that's either homage or stealing.
In addition to being a producer, he's a thief.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's either a homage to you or it's thievery of your title. I'm not sure which.
I'm sure that there are millions of creative consultants around.
Yeah, exactly. You know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, which... Speaking of which, you know, I think I just segued myself very nicely there. I was going to ask you this question at a certain point, and I guess I'll ask you on this now. In terms of imitation, it's a serious form of flattery. Cracked Magazine, when they were out there, what did you think about them? I mean, they were folks that I always found to be amusing as well in terms of what they did, but clearly if there's no Mad Magazine, there's no Cracked. They weren't doing anything original. How did you guys look at them as far as
competition? Well, you know what? The thing about Cracked was that they, for a long time, they really just copied, not material out of Mad, but everything Mad did, they would do. You know, they had the janitor. I forgot the janitor's name. And then they had a kind of a fold-in gimmick when Jaffe started to fold. And there was a point at which Bill sued them. Mm-hmm. and he sued for $0. He didn't want any money. He just said, all I'm saying is just create your own departments. Just don't look at MAD and say, hey, they're doing that. Let's put a little twist on it and do that too. So, quite frankly, I didn't read Cracked, but I know that Bill was quite put out sometimes when he called me in one day and said, can you believe this? Look, we did this, they did that. We did this, a month later they did that. So you know, we didn't sit down and analyze Cracked. I think since Bill wasn't crazy about it, we didn't bother with it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where it was around a long time, but ultimately didn't stand the test of time because, you know, you guys are still out there in your classic format as well as everything online, and they've just been around online the last couple of years as well. So ultimately they weren't able to stay in the marketplace and compete with you over the real long haul. What I wonder about here, and I don't know if I'm reaching on asking a question like this
okay.
or if it's anything that is a natural connection, but everything with MAD over the years, a good part of the humor of MAD was examining things really of a gadgetry type nature and occasionally taking a look at maybe some futuristic type stuff. In terms of where you've gone recently in the last couple of years, the Daily Giz Whiz and everything you've done there, is it fair to trace any of that back to when you were at MAD Magazine and some of the humor?
Well, you know
what?
It sort of went the other way. Is that from when I was a kid? When I know you do a lot of sports. When I was a kid, I was not out playing baseball. Mm-hmm. I built a studio in my basement with microphones and amplifiers, and I bought every conceivable. I just loved gadgets, and Bill Gaines loved gadgets, and at MAD, anytime there was an article that was about, anytime it was a trend, first of all, I would always bring in the premises about trends. I'd go, you know what, guys, home theater's getting big, why don't I do the MAD Guide to Home Theater? This thing is getting big, why don't we do the guide to this? And then the same thing at Goodson Todman. I had an office full of gadgets, and one of the women from To Tell the Truth left to produce a local show in New York City over at Fox called Saturday Morning Live, where they had a home handyman segment and a cook segment and the pet segment. And she said, you know, one day, Dick, she said, you know, would you bring some of those gadgets from your office and just come on the air and say what they are? And I said, oh, yeah. Okay. Is it serious? Is it funny? She said, well, it'll be your spot. She said, you could be silly. The only criteria is you have to impart real information, because that's sort of what the show does. So I brought a bunch of gadgets from the office and showed them and talked about them. And boy, a couple days later, she called me. She said, Dick, we got so many great compliments because people like gadgets. Can you come back next week? And I said, yeah. Anyway, so that turned into being on every week, and then someone from Regis and Kathy Lee saw me, and I was not exclusive on Channel 5, and so I went over to Regis, and from Regis to Good Morning America. So it just kept growing, I kept doing gadgets and MAD, and I get into boating. And as you said earlier, I really my bio says that Dick DiBartolo wears a lot of hats, which might explain his severe baldness. But I do a lot of things, and I love them all.
Well, that's really interesting that the show's actually picked up the focus from you instead of the other way around. That is very interesting. So, you know, in many ways, I mean, this looks like something where, you know, you've kind of, whether you've realized it or not, I guess, been kind of pointing towards this for decades. But now, you know, with the internet, with the capacity to podcast, and you've been doing this, as I understand, since February of 06. I mean, it seems like the perfect thing for you to be able to participate in something that you love. And again, in terms of the breakdown of this, you know, you talked about that, you know, some of the gadgets are, you know, just kind of odd in nature or whatever, and not necessarily everything super futuristic. I mean, what would you say the percentage would be in terms of things that are really cutting edge versus things you just classify as oddities?
You know what? I would say they're 80% things you haven't heard of. The guy I work with, his name is Leo Laporte. He was huge on Tech TV, and I used to be on Tech TV, on Screensavers with him, and then he went off and started his own network directly for the internet called Twit, which is This Week in Technology. And one day we had a meeting, and he said, you know, the TV show's done, but I'd like to work with you further. He said, I do monthly podcasts, I do weekly podcasts, I want to do a daily podcast. Could you do a gadget every day of the week? And I said, you know, I think I can, Leo, but let me just tell you what my feeling is about what I am as the GizWiz, is to not talk about the Xbox, not talk about the iPad, not talk about things that everybody in the world is covering, but to go to trade shows and try to find more offbeat gizmos and gadgets. And he said, oh, you know, that sounds absolutely perfect. Let's go along that route. And we started doing it, and, you know, there'll be things. Like, for example, today's gadget, I just looked on my website. Today's gadget is a keyboard for hunting people who hunt and peck at the keyboard, don't know how to use a QWERTY keyboard. Well, I said to the woman at this trade show, I said, ma'am, every 3 years someone comes up with this idea of an ABCD keyboard. You have to tell me what makes yours different if you want me to do anything about it. She said, it's very simple. You push this button, and it reverts back to being a QWERTY keyboard. I said, okay, now that is really something. Because in the past, if someone wanted to use an ABCD keyboard, you had to unplug the QWERTY keyboard, plug in the ABC keyboard, and swap back and forth. This way, and the other thing is, I always am price sensitive to what fans might want to pay. And I said to the woman, before we even go further, what's this sell for? And she said, under $30. I said, okay, great. So that made it, I thought, an interesting gadget for me. It's both an ABCD keyboard, a QWERTY keyboard. It also has, if you are on the internet, it has a whole line of abbreviations, like you can hit the LOL key. It does abbreviations for texting. I thought it was really great. And for $29, and it's down to $25 if you do a web search, I thought that's a great gadget people probably don't know about and would be interested in. So that's the kind of thing I'd look for.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's and now that you mentioned that it's down to $25, I was going to say, when she told you that it was under 30, I'm looking at this here, $29.99. That's one of those things technically true, but there's not a lot of wiggle room underneath that 30
bones. Oh, you know what? Listen, I do it myself. You know, I wrote a book about Gaines and myself called Good Days and Mad. And, like, I sell it on my website for, like, $16.99. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It just psychologically, it's just fun to play. And postage is not $3. Postage is $2.99, you know? you have to just play that game.
Yeah, exactly. That's how the world tends to work as far as how people push stuff. But, you know, it's great. And everybody can get at the stuff here. GizWizBiz.squarespace.com. We've got it linked tonight off of our...
Yeah, I actually don't even need the Squarespace. It's just GizWiz.biz. GizWiz.biz. GizWiz.biz.
Oh, nice. Okay. All right. I was going to say, because we have it linked off of our rundown.
Okay, good.
Tonight.
That's great.
And we're adding you to our Ultimate Links page, which just crossed 2,000 the other day here. So you and 2,000 other links will be swimming on the same thing here.
But, okay.
We definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, we're definitely fans of what you got going on here. And, you know, just a pleasure to have you on. I mean, with a half hour, really, with everything that you've done, Dick, you know, I feel like we're still only scratching the surface. Is there anything, you know, aside from the podcast, which you've got going on a daily basis, anything else that, you know, we should be plugging here that we haven't in the time?
Well, you know, we can just mention is, and you know, there was a date I couldn't do it, then there were 2 dates you couldn't do it, and then it just turned out it's kind of interesting is that tomorrow Bill Gaines will have been deceased for, he died on June 3rd, 1992. And someone said to me, you know, your book, Good Days and Mad, really keeps the memory of Gaines alive. So for the next week, I'm just giving away other stuff along with my book, Memories of Mad. The Alfred E. Newman pictures that Gaines loved and some Alfred E. Newman stamps. So if you want to read about the crazy way Gaines ran Mad and the fun things, I got him into the Statue of Liberty at midnight. We did nutty things together. Check out gizwiz.biz and just click on Mad Collectibles. So that's my only plug.
Definitely, and you know, especially with you being here on that occasion. Yes, as you said, you know, the eve of, you know, 18 years tomorrow, it probably doesn't seem you know quite possible that it was the it's been that long.
But I know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I can well imagine. But again, you know, you've got the, you know, your book, which captures everything about you and he and everything that went on with Mad Magazine at the time. And as I said, Dick, you know, it's a half hour barely does justice to everything you've been involved in, continue to be involved in. It would be our pleasure to have you back sometime, pick up the discussion, and talk about some more fun stuff.
We can do that.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dick.
Okay,
it's really been a pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
All right,
bye.
Take care, Dick. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Dick, all right, goodbye. Dick DiBartolo, everybody. The one and only Dick DiBartolo. Mad Magazine, Match Game. The daily Gizwiz Biz show that he's got going on. Regular contributor to Regis and Kathy Lee and ABC's World News Now. Just an amazing professional career that this guy has had, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, it does really seem like the epitome of that saying that, you know, when you're doing what you love, you're not even really basically going to work every day. And, you know, by that standard, he probably hasn't worked too many days in his life, because I think he's probably had a lot of fun along the way with everything that he's done. And that's something that basically everybody should aspire to be able to accomplish. Quite a career, quite a life, Dick DiBartolo.